Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to Adventures of Security. I'm your host, Tom Olzak. This is a weekly podcast published each Sunday evening, sometime before midnight. You can also find most of the information covered in our sessions at arudiosecurity.com. If you're interested in commenting on what you hear or about topics you'd like us to talk about, please send email to Tom Olzak, O-L-Z-A-K, at gmail.com. The purpose of these podcasts is the exploration of security management, including the crazy things people try to do to each other and to themselves. Tonight we start a three-part series on end-user device security. Where does your business expend most of its resources to prevent malicious code attacks? If your company is like those for which I've worked, most of the time and effort is spent on network perimeter and servers. But what about those ubiquitous end-user devices? Desktop PCs, laptops, and PDAs are everywhere and usually connect to sites outside your security perimeter. In addition, more than 50% of your critical business information is likely stored on these systems. They're also often the home for worms, viruses, and other malicious code. This makes end-user devices perfect portals for attacks against your network. In this session, we're going to explore the problem of end-user device security, a layered approach to ensuring that your end-user devices are secure, and we're going to take a look at what a security program is and how to ensure that you have one that effectively protects your network. Every time a user connects to the internet or any other network outside your security perimeter, the level of security on your network is affected. One of the biggest risks to networks today is the growth of these end-user devices that are used outside the network security perimeter. Home PCs, PDAs, and laptops are becoming common tools used by employees to prove their productivity. And let's face it, those of us who manage security in small, medium, and large-sized businesses are well aware of the fact that this trend is not really going to slow down at all. And trying to take those devices away from users can be a political quagmire. However, the control most companies have on how, where, and when these devices connect is limited. These devices are commonly used to browse the internet and connect to external networks over which we have no control. Couple these activities with a lack of consistent configurations, poor patch management, and outdated or absent antivirus software on both mobile and internal devices, and you create the conditions necessary to bring your network to its knees. So how can we protect ourselves from the threats posed by these devices? The answer is the implementation of a good, effective security program. A security program that enables security in a layered approach. The objective of end-user device layered security is to implement a variety of controls that, in their entirety, effectively neutralize incoming threats. And from information moving from an external source to end-user devices at the far end of a layered security environment has to pass through several different layers before reaching its target. These layers comprise administrative, physical, and technical safeguards. The effectiveness of this model must extend to all devices, whether located on the company network, at home, or at a customer site. But is it necessary to implement all the layers to ensure end-user device security? Not necessarily. Which layers to implement and to what extent is a risk management decision? To help with this decision, each of the layers will be discussed in detail in this and the next two sessions. In this podcast, we're going to talk about the first three layers of a good security model, and they are management support, developing a security program, and user awareness. Management support is the first step toward a secure environment. And support has to start with executive management and be pushed down. But getting this support isn't always easy. Some of the challenges include the perception that security is a hindrance to efficient business operations. Implementation of security controls and the resources required to manage those controls is seen as providing no return on investment. The lack of verifiable security incidents leads to management perception that there's little or no risk to information assets. And finally, in some cases, information may not be considered a business asset to be protected. Failure to overcome these challenges by the security professional can mean a small or non-existent security budget, as well as a general lack of interest in security at all levels of the organization. These two issues combine to present a soft target for all types of attacks. So how do you get management to see the importance of protecting information? The best way I've found to get management's attention is to build a strong business case that shows the value of security controls, a business case that provides a return on investment. I see this as a two-step process. You can't build a business case unless you understand the business. So the first step is to get involved. Develop a solid understanding of each segment of your organization. This will assist you in determining the importance of various types of information and how protecting that information contributes to overall cost reductions. The second step is to establish your credibility by being an enabler rather than a disabler. Managers pushing security often find it difficult to understand the balance between securing information and enhancing operational efficiency. They come to meetings for telling destruction of life as we know it if information is not completely inaccessible. This may scare away possible supporters as they realize that the proposed information security environment is unrealistic. Always look for the middle path between effective security and operational efficiency. Work with management to identify how various security controls impact employee productivity. Show how security enables the organization to continue operating in the face of internal and external threats. Demonstrate the value of security in ensuring the availability of accurate, timely information. When you're ready to make your case, present your proposals for security controls from a business perspective. Speak the language of executive management. If you're in the healthcare industry, remember to relate your controls to regulatory compliance with the HIPAA. If your company is publicly traded, Sarbanes-Oxley is a good place to start in making your point. Whatever industry you're in, or whether you're privately owned or publicly traded, always present your security proposal in terms relevant to the business environment in which your organization operates. If you still have problems getting what you need, try convincing management to commit resources to perform a risk assessment on one or two of your critical systems. Present these assessments to management, detailing the threats the organization faces and the system vulnerabilities to those threats. Once again, make it real for your audience by defining risk in terms of lost business, loss in shareholder confidence, etc. Once you obtain management support, you can't assume you'll continue to receive it. It's important to develop metrics to demonstrate the effectiveness of your security program. Examples of successes you can report include blocked intrusions reported by your intrusion prevention controls, a reduction in the number of malware incidents, or the elimination of lost productivity due to such incidents, and finally, periodically reworking critical system risk assessments to demonstrate reduced risk levels. In addition to successes, ensure you stay involved in every project to show how security is an integral part of implementation. Remind management that the cost of including security in new system planning is far less than attempting to apply controls once the system is deployed. Gaining management support is a big step, but it's only the beginning. Once you have management support, you're ready for the second step toward information security, the development of a security program. A security program consists of policies, procedures, guidelines, and baselines. Together, they ensure the definition of administrative, physical, and technical controls, the consistent adherence to organizational security requirements, the day-to-day management of security activities, and the ability to define reasonable and appropriate security for each business-critical system. To support these objectives, an effective security program also includes risk assessment activities to test the effectiveness of controls. These activities include penetration testing, vulnerability testing, and policy procedure gap analysis. In penetration testing, either members of your team or a third party attempts to crack your perimeter controls. Vulnerability testing checks your systems to see if they are open to exploitation by common threats. And a policy and procedure gap analysis assesses your current policies and procedures to ensure all relevant areas of security are included in your security program. Finally, a good security program includes an incident response process. We're going to cover incident response in much more detail in a future podcast. There are two types of security programs, enterprise and system issue specific. An enterprise security program contains the policies, standards, and guidelines that provide the general security canopy under which all systems operate. They are supported by general baselines and procedures that apply to all facets of the information environment. System or issue-specific security programs target individual critical systems or organizational issues. Organizational issues may include how to define and implement business continuity, use of a specific methodology for change management, development, etc., framework within which cutting-edge technology may be used, including email, handheld devices, wireless networking, and portable storage devices, regulatory compliance, tools and methods for managing risk, physical security, and administrative security. The components of a system or issue-specific program augment the enterprise program by targeting concerns that are unique to certain operational areas of the business. As you might expect, the greatest direct cost associated with the development and management of a security program is personnel. Some organizations outsource the complete security effort. This may be a good option if you just don't want to be bothered with the mechanics of data protection. However, you're still responsible for how the outsource vendor performs, the policies put in place, and the effectiveness of the services provided. This approach always makes me a little nervous. I like to have more control over my security environment. It can also be much more expensive than doing it yourself if you're not careful. The biggest benefit of this approach is that you have a professional security team monitoring your network and managing incident response. Another approach is to do it all yourself. This is not a bad way to implement security, assuming you or a member of your team has the skills, time, and desire to build and manage a security program. For a small organization, this could also mean a long-term commitment by most or all of your IS department. Unless you're working for a large company with a dedicated security staff, this may not be the best use of your human resources. A third way to implement a security program is to engage security consultants to work with your team to develop appropriate policies, procedures, guidelines, and baselines. As your team works through the development and implementation processes, ensure that a knowledge transfer takes place. This provides you with a professionally built program, a trained staff, and you don't have to commit your entire IS team to the project. Once the program's in place, you can outsource the parts of it you decide are more efficiently managed by dedicated service organizations. I actually prefer this approach. It optimizes your in-house staff while providing an adequate level of security to the organization. In addition to personnel costs, there are technical costs related to monitoring and measuring the effectiveness of the program. Without the right tools and processes in place, you can't continuously improve your ability to protect your information assets while managing overall costs. Some of the tools you may need include a port scanner to check for server and workstation vulnerabilities, a network scanner to identify network vulnerabilities, penetration testing equipment and software, network monitors, and an intrusion prevention system. Finally, you'll need resources to disseminate information to your staff. As we'll discuss later in this podcast, employee awareness activities and employee training are key to securing your information assets. Policies form the basic framework of any security program. At the program level, policies represent senior management's security objectives. At the system level, they provide rules for the construction and operation of specific systems. No matter whether program or system specific, policies help prevent inconsistencies by forming the basis for detailed standards, guidelines, and procedures. They also serve as tools to inform employees about appropriate activities and restrictions required for regulatory compliance. Finally, policies make clear management's expectations of employee involvement in protecting information assets. When building a policy, make sure it's clear and flexible. It shouldn't provide so much detail that it forces unreasonable constraints on operational areas of your business. There should be room to make management decisions that fit particular challenges as they arise. Program policies establish the security program. They provide its form and character. The sections that make up a program policy include purpose, scope, responsibilities, and compliance. Purpose includes the objectives of the program, such as improved recovery times, reduce costs or downtime due to loss of data, reduction in errors for both system changes and operational activities, regulatory compliance, and management of overall confidentiality, integrity, and availability. The scope of a policy provides guidance on whom and what are covered by the policy. Coverage may include facilities, lines of business, employees or departments, technology, and processes. Responsibilities for the implementation and management of the policy are assigned in the responsibility section of a program policy. Organizational units or individuals are potential assignment candidates. Compliance provides for the policy's enforcement. Oversight activities and disciplinary considerations should be described clearly. As you'll see later in this podcast, the contents of this section are meaningless unless an effective awareness program is in place. System-specific policies include the framework for system and issue-specific security programs. Like program policies, system policies should be flexible enough to allow managers to make effective operational decisions while safeguarding the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of information assets. System policies typically address two areas: security objectives and operational security standards. Policies that describe security objectives clearly define measurable, achievable goals. These goals should focus on data owner directives intended to protect specific systems. The policies are written to take into account the system's functional requirements as seen by business users. Because policies apply constraints on how a system or a technology may be deployed and used, there's usually a danger that meeting security objectives may adversely impact operational efficiency. So it's important to balance reduction in risk with the cost associated with potential losses in productivity. Operational security standards provide a clear set of rules for operating and managing a system or a technology. As with system policy objectives, these rules shouldn't be so restrictive that they paralyze your organization. In addition, the administrative burden associated with managing and enforcing overly restrictive policies may cost your organization more than the business impact you're trying to protect against. The elements of a system or issue-specific policy may include purpose, objectives, scope, roles and responsibilities, compliance, and policy owner and contact information. The purpose section defines the challenge management is addressing. Challenges may include regulatory constraints, protection of highly sensitive data, or the safe use of certain technologies. In some cases, it may be necessary to define terms. It's important that everyone affected by the policy clearly understands its content. Finally, clearly state the conditions under which the policy is applicable. The objective section may include actions and configurations prohibited or controlled, as well as standards and guidelines. It's in this section that you define the results you expect from enforcement of the policy. In the scope section, you specify where, when, how, and to whom the policy applies. The roles and responsibilities section identifies the business units or individuals responsible for the various areas of implementation and enforcement of the policy. In the compliance section, you should clearly state the possible consequences of not conforming to the standards and guidelines listed in the objective section. In policy owner and contact information, list the person who is ultimately responsible for managing the policy. Since the data owner is responsible for defining the protection required for a specific system, he or she may be a good choice for policy owner. Ensure that contact information for the policy owner is kept up to date. This allows individuals responsible for implementing systems under the policy to contact the policy owner for clarification on standards and guidelines. The final step in the construction of a policy is approval by senior management. Without their approval and support, a policy isn't worth very much. One way to ensure management support is to involve relevant areas of the business in the construction of each policy. This helps prevent the perception that information security policies and information security in general are an IS problem. It also nourishes a feeling of ownership across the organization. Managers are more willing to support operational restrictions that result in clear business value they help to define. So, now that we've built the policies, how do we implement them? Policy implementation is also very important. After gaining management support and sign-off, implementation planning begins. The rollout of a new policy should include many of the following activities. First of all, ensure everyone is aware of the new policy. Post it on your intranet, send notification email, or perform what other mass distribution actions work well within your organization. Discuss the content of the policy at management and staff meetings. It's important during these discussions to include a review of the intended results of the of the policy. This helps your organization's employees to see the standards and guidelines from the proper perspective. You should also conduct training sessions. Training should occur at three levels: management, general staff, and technical staff. Management training is intended to educate managers about their role in enforcement and compliance activities. It should include a big picture view of where the policy fits in the overall security program. General staff training is provided to all staff levels in the organization. In addition to making employees aware of the contents of the policy, it should also address any question about how the objectives, standards, and guidelines will impact day-to-day operation of the business. Staff training should always precede any attempts to sanction an employee for failure to follow a security policy. And finally, technical staff training is typically provided for the IS staff. The focus of this training is how the new policy affects existing system or network configurations and baselines. In some cases, the policy may result in the creation of one or more new configuration baselines. You should also implement a user awareness program. User awareness is the third level in a layered security approach, and the final layer that we're going to discuss in this podcast. It's through an effective awareness program that a desire to meet policy objectives becomes part of your organization's culture. In building an awareness program, the first step is to understand the differences in the way each area of the business perceives your policies and their objectives. One of the easiest ways to accomplish this is the creation of a cross-functional awareness team. The assimilation of different perspectives will provide insights into the best way to design awareness materials. An awareness message should be short and to the point. The content of the message, whether delivered electronically or by some hard copy method, should address personal as well as organizational concerns. This aids in making the message more meaningful to individual users. There are many ways to deliver awareness messages. Table tent cards in the company lunchroom, voicemail announcements, and posters are just a few. Be creative. Continuous use of the same old delivery methods may result in users ignoring them. The creation of unique delivery methods may not always be necessary, however. Review the general training and awareness programs that currently exist in your organization. These may include new employee training, infrastructure training for new network engineers, application training for specific system users, and operational training for system managers. Building awareness training into each of these processes is an effective way to build user awareness with tools and content appropriate for various audiences. User awareness is a continuous process. Like all processes, it's always valuable to understand the effectiveness of your approach. Clear measures of effectiveness can assist in adjusting your awareness program to meet management security objectives. Some ways to gauge user awareness include online tests on your intranet, formal surveys, and informal staff meetings to discuss security issues. Regardless of the method appropriate for your organization, don't skip this step. Make sure you're getting value for your awareness program dollars. Well, that's the end of our podcast for this evening. And to summarize, the three foundational elements of a secure information processing environment are management support, an effective security program, and continuous user awareness activities. Management support is gained through a thorough understanding of business challenges associated with information confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Presentations to management for budget and project approval must approach security from the perspective of how business value will be enhanced. Reports containing metrics showing the effectiveness of security program activities help to ensure continued support. Security programs, both program and system or issue specific, are built around well-written and management approved policies. Policies should clearly define the challenges addressed, security objectives, roles and responsibilities, and compliance considerations. New policies should be rolled out with appropriate training. User awareness is a fundamental requirement for information security effectiveness. Consistently meeting security objectives requires a shift in user thinking, a shift in an organization's culture. Be creative in your approach and keep the message simple. Use metrics to determine whether your employees are actually getting to the message. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we'll cover the next three layers in a layered security model. Until then, be careful what you click. This is Tom Olzak, signing off.